This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
That's not, what's really funny is the fucking bank job away in Sea Caucus, I'm in the middle of the fucking weeds, laying down. He comes over, he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm resting. Here you're resting. Got a fucking beach in a park. I said, I'm resting. I know I'm resting. I'm resting. They pull me in. They start giving me all kinds of questions, you know, this and that. He says, so what are you going to tell us, tough guy? I said, my usual. Zero. Nothing. I tell you the fuck. He says, no, you're going to tell me something today, tough guy. I said, all right, I'll tell you something. Go fuck your mother. Bing, pow, boom, bing. You saw the paper, Anthony. My head was up like this. So now I'm coming around, you know. I start to come out of it. Who do I see in front of me? This big prick again. He says, oh, what do you want to tell me now, tough guy? I said, Bing, what are you doing here? I thought I'd tell you to go fuck your mother. I thought he was going to shit. Pow, bing, pow. What the fuck is... See, I wish I was big just once.
You're really funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
It's funny, you know. It's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
Just, you know, you're just funny. It's funny, you know, the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Tommy, no, you got it all wrong.
Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how? What?
Just, you know, you're funny.
You mean, let me understand this, because I, you know, maybe it's me. I'm a little fucked up, maybe. But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
I'm not just, you know how you tell the story. What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. How the fuck am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
Get the fuck out of here, Tommy.
You motherfucker. I almost had him. You stuttering prick here. Frankie, was he shaking? I wonder about you sometimes, Henry. You may fold under questioning.
Hit my music.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich, and joining me today is the host of a podcast that I've been on many times, Wrestling Omakase, which is also on the VOW Podcast Network. You can also find their various writings on voicesofwrestling.com.
Mostly New Japan previews.
Mostly that, yeah. Making their triumphant return to Music of the Mat, it's the one and only John Carroll. John, welcome back, man.
Well, thank you for having me. Andrew, omakase.
I know. Here's the thing. After I said it, I realized I was wrong. And I went over it in my head, like, all day long, like, over and over and over again. But, you know, when the mics turn on, it just shoots right out there, you know?
It's cool. I just wanted to... I have a reputation to uphold. I can't let that slide.
I know. I apologize.
It's fine. I mean, it's good to be back, you know. Anyone who followed me on Twitter knows I had a rough week. But, you know, I'm very happy to be back on Music of the Mat to... You know, get my mind off of stuff and have a good time, talk about theme songs, and generally be wacky.
Well, you know, I figured that I've been on Omakase 3 times now,
yeah.
Which always been a ton of fun to be on the show, too. But you've only been on this show once, and that was back on episode 8, the Dragon Gate Heel Units episode, which was about a year ago now. So I wanted to balance the scales somewhat a little, you know, and return the hospitality and have you on again because, you know, I enjoy talking to you about wrestling, whether it's on here or on Twitter or the Slack chat or wherever.
Mostly Slack.
Yeah, mostly there. Yeah, mostly on Slack.
You've been on here. You've been on three times, including an episode that you basically pitched, which was like the old WWE episode.
Yep.
Which is fun, but not a topic I probably ever would have broached if if not prodded. So, but it was fun, and that episode did get some. You know, people seemed to enjoy it. So.
Well, yeah, you know. I'm a draw. What can I say?
Before that, it was like two New Japan episodes. So, but yeah, I mean, you do record less often than I do, though, so that's worth keeping in mind. Like, I'm pretty solid every week, other than, like, you know, when very bad things happen. But, you know, other than that, I don't think I've really missed a week. So, whereas I think you're like every other week, right?
Right.
Yeah, so. But yeah, so Omakase, it's on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. It's been a journey. We're already approaching a year of it, which I cannot believe. Just time just moves so fast once you start getting older. And I'm very proud of everything we've done, and especially just the variety of different topics we've been able to broach. I mean, you know, you've been on to talk New Japan. You've been on to talk like 2003 to 2007 WWE. You know, we do like Joshi, we do like every other Japanese version of the Sun. The only thing we probably don't really do that much is Lucha, and that's just because I don't know anything about it. So, like, I just have no frame of reference on the Lucha, unfortunately. Like, we did one episode with JR, like on Lucha Hall of Fame candidates, but I really don't know. Lucha's not my area of expertise, so. But yeah, other than that, it's been fun, and you're obviously very welcome to come back on again. I'm surprised you haven't been on any of the draft episodes yet.
Look, I missed the boat in the first one, okay? So that's my excuse
you, like,
there.
Yeah, you just missed it. The next draft is next week, and I guess it'll probably come out like a few days after this comes out, and that'll be like our WWE Women and Joshi draft. I just figured you didn't volunteer for that one because you don't know about Joshi, probably, right?
Not really, no.
It's fair. I mean, I was surprised some of the people that volunteered for that one. I was like, wow, I didn't even know the two of you watched Joshi, but apparently Kelly and Lawson surprised me.
Oh, well, spoilers for that episode then.
Yeah. Well, no, I already said it on the last Omakase. So,
oh, well, never mind.
Yeah. I try to always have at least be booked 1 week ahead so I can plug the next week at the end of the episode.
Well, John, as I mentioned, the last time that you were on the show, we talked about Dragon Gate, and today is episode 33. We will be talking about another prominent Japanese promotion that begins with the letter D. Of course, I'm talking about Tradition.
Yeah, Tradition.
Kidding.
I'm really excited to talk about Osamu Nishimura.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Bob Backlund MSG tour. Let's get into it.
Yeah. I'm kidding. I'm talking about DDT Wrestling, Dramatic Dream Team. Is what those letters stand for.
Yep.
DDT is one of the major wrestling promotions in Japan. It was founded back in 1997, and it's still going strong today. And DDT...
Although good luck finding shows from 1997.
Well, yeah, I imagine so, yeah. DDT, it's one of those promotions that I made an effort to delve into more at the start of the year, because I've seen a few matches here and there, and a few clips, and so forth, but... I've never really followed it any closer than that. So this year, I've started to pay more attention to DDT. And a lot of what I've seen has been, you know, pretty solid. I don't watch every single show, but from what I've seen, I like it a lot. So now, John, many moons ago, you were actually the one who told me that if I ever did a DDT episode, I should give you a call.
Yes.
And, yep, here you are.
Here I am.
So, yep, here you are. Yeah. So, safe to say that you're a fan of DDT.
Yeah.
You've been watching it longer than I have as well.
Yeah,
so.
only like 2 years, but, like, as far as following every show. But it was my first trip to Japan that really got me into it. Like, it's when I first went over there and I started seeing, like, you know, I saw, like, the I was on there with Jamie, who runs the Dramatic DDT site, and I just saw, like, how passionate he was about it. And then I was like, okay, let me check this out. And I just started watching it. It was just fucking awesome. So, I forget, can I curse on this podcast? I don't even remember.
Oh, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. Fuck yeah. No, but yeah, I just love it. DDT's awesome. It's just so many things at once. It's like, if you're not into what they're doing in their, like, serious title scene, which I'm not right now, honestly, then you still have, like, wacky comedy. You still have, you know, the six-man tag. They just have such, a gigantic roster now, too, especially when you add in, like, all the sister and the sister and brother promotions. It's just, like, there's just always so much going on with them. By the way, the other thing, too, that's funny about me being on a DDT episode, did you know that DDT and Dragon Gate, my last episode, actually did shows together?
I didn't know this. No, no.
Yeah, they did the dramatic Dream Gate, which was, oh, God, I should have looked up the years. It's like, I believe it's one of them was like 2008. So it's been a while now, but they did do, like, they did two shows together called Dramatic Dream Gate. And, you know, it was a very, it was a very big thing at the time. It, like, involved Akira Tozawa getting viciously assaulted by Don Chukudino and a lot of other things that went down then. But yeah, it was they've hooked up before, the Dramatic Dream Gate. It's been a long time now, but yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, what appeals to me about DDT is the variety of it, you know, because I think people who aren't in the know on DDT, they tend to put it in a certain box, which is crazy, goofy,
yeah,
silly, weird comedy wrestling, which, to be fair,
they have it.
yeah, it's a big part of what DDT is.
I mean, if you want monkeys winning titles, monkeys and boxing gloves, like, yes, this is your promotion.
Monkeys, ladders, food, yeah. All that stuff and more, yeah. That's what makes DDT stand out amongst the other Japanese promotions.
Yeah.
And it's also what I imagine is gotten them the most attention over the years. But if you really look at DDT, like you said, John, there's a lot more to it than comedy. Yes, you have Dan Shokudino and Super Sasadango Machine and Antonio Honda and Kazuki Hirata and all those guys, but you've also got guys like Kenosuke Takeshita and Tetsuya Endo, Shuji Ishikawa, Daisuke Sasaki, Shigehiro Irie, Speedball Mike Bailey, Hiroshima, Kazusada Higuchi, who are all very talented wrestlers who will put on these serious, awesome blow-away matches. You've got an extreme division that does these crazy hardcore matches. You've got DNA, which is DDT's rookie class. Sometimes on a big show, they'll bring in, as you mentioned, Joshi wrestlers from Tokyo Joshi Pro, or they'll bring in outsiders like Naomichi Marufuji or Jiro Kurashio or Colt Cabana or Daisuke Sakamoto. It's not just one flavor of ice cream. You know, there's plenty to pick and choose from. Now, granted, they will sprinkle in some comedy into those other areas. Like, Shuji Ishikawa will wrestle this intense, full-force, serious match, and then afterwards, he'll sing some karaoke while Mad Polly dances. Which I love, by the way. I love that a lot.
Yeah,
but still, awesome. It's not like comedy is the main focus all the time. You know, there's plenty of different styles of wrestling to go around.
I mean, the general rule is if you're watching a DDT undercard, you're probably going to see a bunch of comedy. Like, that's where they stick a lot of the comedy. You're probably going to see a bunch of the DNA guys in, like, some kind of six-man tag or something, and against some of the veterans in, like, a more serious match. And then it's going to build to a main event where you're almost always going to get, like, you know, some really good wrestlers in a really good wrestling match. So it's just a very much like a, you know, I know plenty of people that don't watch the comedy in DDT, that just watch the serious matches. And, you know, that's, you know, if you really cannot stand comedy wrestling, then you can totally still get value out of DDT. But if you do like comedy wrestling, and the big thing for DDT, for people so used to North American comedy, is like, really specifically WWE, is that DDT comedy is actually often funny. So I think everybody should give it a chance. But sometimes the humor can be very Japanese. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm grateful, really, that the variety is there and that they do have this serious in-ring stuff to go along with the comedy stuff. Because not that I'm opposed to comedy wrestling, obviously, because, you know, it's me we're talking about here. You know, I'm a corny, jokey boob. But like you suggested, John, some of the comedy in DDT, it doesn't always land with me.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of it is language-based, you know, like when Super Sasadango Machine is doing his 8-minute PowerPoint presentation, or when Antonio Honda is telling a story on the mic during a match or whatever.
The Honda story is the same thing every time, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, it's still in Japanese. I mean, I don't know what he's saying, regardless, so. And there are no subtitles either, so all of it goes right over my head.
Yeah.
So I do prefer the more physical comedy that goes beyond the language barrier, except for the Dino stuff. I'm not really a fan of that particular brand of physical comedy, shall we say. It's just too much for me, you know.
Yeah,
I'm a sweet, innocent boy, John. I'm a sweet, innocent boy.
But, I mean, people should also keep in mind, too, that the DDT... And first of all, Jamie at Dramatic DDT has been doing an awesome job. So if you're not watching these shows live, you can if there's some joke that you didn't get, you can almost always, like, read his report and you'll figure out what the joke... And he'll explain the joke. But now, like, there's these DDT English accounts that are, you know... I know it's like Mr. Haku is the guy who's doing it now, and he basically like is translating these promos and tweets too, which is very important actually for DDT. Like DDT wrestlers fucking love Twitter, so like they tweet DDT and Tokyo Joshi Pro, they tweet a lot. So like getting those tweet translations have been awesome too. But yeah, but he's been translating stuff like during the shows, which is really cool and very helpful. And like I've been, you know, I know a little bit of Japanese, but not like enough to, you know, enough to understand like 10% of a promo usually. So like having him there to really help has helped me get even more of the humor in real time. The other cool thing I want to mention about DDT, because, you know, if you're like me, and I assume, I don't know what your work schedule is like. If you're like me and you work like a 9-to-5 or 10-to-6 job, you probably don't get to see a lot of Japanese wrestling live these days. You know, a lot of it's at like 5:30 a.m. But the cool thing about DET is their Korakuens are always like 12 p.m. Japan time on a weekend. So even in the Eastern time zone, that's like 11 p.m. on Saturday, you know, on Friday or Saturday. So it's like the only Japanese promotion left that I can actually watch live as an adult with a, you know, full-time job now. So that's a cool thing, too. I definitely wanted to mention that it's one of the few promotions, you know, us adults can watch live, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of variety, actually, that variety in DDT, that also extends to the music as well. You know, yeah. you go to a DDT show, you'll not just see different types of matches and styles of wrestling, but you'll hear different styles of music as well. And that's really what I want to focus on in this episode, is the different styles of artists and sounds and genres that we'll talk about today. You know, some of it is in-house, some of it is mainstream Western artists, and some of it is mainstream Japanese artists.
Yeah, which is very rare for Japanese.
Yeah, it's very rare.
When, like, when you gave me this list and I was looking through it, it's like one of the things that really struck me is, wow, they actually use Japanese artists in DDT, because like there's really nobody that uses that in New Japan, and even like All Japan, it's like they use some Japanese like artists, but it's like mostly obscure stuff. Like whoever does that Zeus rap or whatever, you know?
Right.
But it's not really mainstream Japanese art, so it's very rare for Japanese wrestling for whatever reason.
The thing is, though, and I think I have this right, is that DDT Universe, which is their streaming service,
yeah,
they will allow the mainstream songs to be heard and not dubbed over, but only on certain shows.
Only on tape shows. So basically on the live feed... Because it's the same feed that's going to Abima, which is like the this over the top service that owns, that the company basically owns DDT now. Those still have to be censored, censored, like dubbed over / muted. But the tape shows usually have no problem. Like the shows that they're just putting up later, and when you play them back, like those almost never have anything muted. Now, if you can get access to the Samurai TV feed, like I have, then you don't have to worry about anything like that, which is like one of the songs on this list. I know they mute every single time a DDT Universe, and I'm just like sitting here like, thank God I can watch it on Samurai, because I can't imagine not hearing the song. But I'll say it when I get to it.
So yeah, to sum it up, if it's a taped show, like a smaller house show, you'll hear all the music.
Yeah.
And if it's a larger show like Kirk and Hall or Sumo Hall, it's gonna get dubbed. And that's just the, you know, just the name of the game in wrestling, really. So
I mean, it's different than like New Japan World. Well, I mean, the only song left they dub is
Makabe.
Kabe. Yeah, but like they dub that at everything though, not just the live show. And friggin' All Japan TV, it's like the entire show is muted except like Suwama and Miyahara. I think are the only two I can think of where they're not muted. So.
All right, John, are you ready to dramatically dream a little dream with me?
I'm very ready.
All right, so we have 8 wrestlers, 8 themes to talk about today. We start off with Hiroshima, all capital letters, very important there, thank you very much. Hiroshima, one of the longtime pillars of DDT, a 9-time openweight champion, an 8-time tag champion, current extreme champion, hero to children everywhere. His theme is called Somato.
Can I explain the capital letter thing before? Can I get like really nerdy?
Well, I just introed the song, but fine. Oh. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but I want to explain this because I'm always. Do you know why that all those Japanese wrestlers with English names like the letters are capital?
No, I do not know.
Okay, because capital and lowercase, like uppercase and lowercase, does not exist in Japanese. So if you're gonna display a name in basically with English letters, you know, Romaji as they call it, it would always be capital. So that's why they don't have lowercase. So they're not trying, like, I think Americans, when we see it, we think they're trying to make a point by putting it in capital letters, right? Like Kenta or Hiroshima. But that's really not the point they're trying to make. The point they're just trying to make is like, this name is in English, so it's exotic. Like, the first time I saw, I think the first wrestler I ever saw that actually used lowercase English letters in their name was, like, got Kazuma Sakamoto. When he came back over to America after the, or back over to Japan after the whole run as, like, Tenzai's servant or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, wow, Kazuma Sakamoto was the first Japanese wrestler to just be like, hey, lowercase letters exist. I'm gonna use them. But yeah, that's the reason, because they don't. Like, uppercase, lowercase, it's not a concept that is, like, you know, that they use in language, basically, so.
The more you know. Do, 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 do.
It's okay if you want to cut that out. I thought that was fun.
Anyway, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted there, this is called Somato. Starting off with here is a staple of the Japanese wrestling music oeuvre, and that is the classic combo of heroic rock guitars and delightfully triumphant sounding keyboards. We've heard it a million times over with, you know, varying degrees of intensity. Themes for, you know, Kenta Kobashi, Jun Akiyama, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Misawa, Tenzan, all the greats of yesteryear and today. It's got kind of a 90s vibe to it, perhaps. And it's a song that is really fitting for a guy like Hiroshima, you know, who, for many years, he's been one of DDT's babyface heroes. It starts off with that cool rockin' intro with the gnarly guitar, then the rapid-fire drum roll hits, before it delves into the heroic main melody with the keyboards. It gives the song a nice kickoff at the start. Plus, you could also look at it as a way of saying, you know, Hiroshima, he is a good guy. You know, he may kiss the babies and hug the fat girls, but when he gets in the ring and gets down to it, he means business. You know, he's going to come at you with everything he's got.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a really cool, like, it's a very generic Babyface Ace theme song, but that doesn't mean it's bad, you know? Like, it reminds me of like, a, you know, like, a very, it reminds me a lot of the Misawa theme song, honestly, and it's like, it almost comes off as like an indie Misawa, which is cool, because that's basically what Hirashima is. He's like, you know, even uses like elbows, and I think it's a very cool little vibe, and you know, that opening guitar riff, you know, like, whenever I hear that, I can instantly picture Hirashima doing his, like, you know, that thing he does where he comes out and he's like looking down and he like very slowly looks up and he gives that little grin. One of the funniest moments in GT history was just last December when they did a match where everybody was dressing up as each other, and like Ken Oka came out to this as Hirashima to this song and did like this slow head rise, and like I was like crying with laughter because just the image of Ken Oka going through all this and being the super, and I don't know how the fuck he kept a straight face. It was amazing. But yeah, I love Hirashima, and it's a great theme, and it's named after his finisher, by the way, the Samada, the double knee. And it's a very cool theme song. I like it a lot better than Takeshita's, who we're not going to talk about today, but I think Takeshita's is not nearly as good as far as being like a top ace babyface song. So I think this one's a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I love the way that the melody flows. You know, the way it seamlessly weaves in the piano and the happy-sounding keyboards and the guitars, the even tempo of it all. It's not an erratic song. It's not jumping all over the place. It's not bombarding you with noise. There's a level of comfort here, you know, level of stability, you might say.
I was going to say stability, too. It's a great word.
Because, and that's also true for a guy like Hirashima, who has been with DDT for years and years and years. He's been that stable main event level guy who you can always rely on to represent DDT and be the good guy and put in a good performance in a match. So Hirashima and this theme, they certainly go together.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hirashima's original gimmick was, you know, literally hero with an exclamation point. So they're not subtle about what Hirashima is supposed to be. And you know, his other gimmick is like indie wrestling's strongest wrestler. Which, again, makes total, like, this gimmick, or this theme song, fits that a lot. And it's just a very, it's a very cool song for, like, a babyface ace. You know, just kind of strums along, and then by the time you get to the end, it's just one of those songs that you forget you were listening to.
You know, John, it's like I always say, Samato Samato. Yeah. I've got a few more of those in the chamber, by the way. Just be ready for them, all right? Just be ready. Moving on now, and John, we're about to take a trip to the wrong side of the tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Our next wrestler is the leader of Damnation, the big heel stable in DDT, a man by the name of Daisuke Sasaki. His theme is by a band called Folkice, and it's off of their 2008 demo. It's called Helveti. Take everything that we just said about Samato, throw it out the window. Just throw it all out there, because this song is like the complete, total opposite of Samato. I mean, from the very first distorted note, that the song makes it clear that it's not here to play nice or to inspire people or to do good deeds. This song is here to fuck shit up, which makes sense because Folkice are a Japanese hardcore punk band. And a hardcore punk band typically tries to make music that fucks shit up.
Yeah.
Which is why we get the standard hardcore punk rock affair, you know, the loud, gnashing guitars, the smashing drums, the screaming vocals, Helvete, Helvete, Helvete. It's going a mile a minute. The song is just pure audio chaos. And like Hiroshima, it makes total sense for a guy like Daisuke Sasaki to have this song, because he's a chaotic guy. He's not the clean-cut, high school quarterback valedictorian. He's a punk who hangs out under the bleachers and smokes cigarettes with the other punks. You know, he's got a bad attitude. He uses underhanded tactics in his matches. He uses weapons a lot. He's a former extreme champion. Not that he can only do the hardcore matches. The guy can wrestle, for sure. But he's a heel. And he's got a real, you know, sour disposition about him.
One of the most popular guys in the company, too.
Yeah. And what better way to convey that dour mood than to play loud, angry music for everyone else to hear? You know? So it works for teenagers, and it works for Sasaki.
Yeah. So I'm guessing, I'm just going to make a wild guess. You're probably not very into the Japanese hardcore music scene.
Not really. No.
I mean, I just want to mention that Japan has like a really, they love hardcore and post-hardcore, like as a very, very vibrant hardcore punk and post-hardcore like music scene going back to like the late, well, actually going all the way back to like the 80s. But most of the stuff I've heard is more like late 90s through like mid 2000s. But like, yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff if you're into that and you want to check that out. I mean, like, I can definitely recommend you some bands like Number Girl and Bloodthirsty Butchers, a bunch of other ones. But the song we're talking about here is like basically like of all the songs on this list, I can't imagine Daisuke Sasaki coming out to anything else. It's just so perfect for him. Like the moment that like screeching guitar just like starts and like he's about to come out, it's just like, or the amp feedback, whatever the fuck it is at the start, it's just so him, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's this guy who wears that shirt for a while. He wore a shirt for a while that said like it was like the Sex Pistols, the takeoff of the Sex Pistols original album cover. It was like, you know, here's the damnation instead of or never mind the bullet. You know
what you mean.
About.
Yeah.
And that is just such a perfect shirt for him. This is what they are. They're like a punk. They're like the dirty punk band of wrestling. And that's what Damnation is. So this song is like absolutely perfect for Sasaki. And I just think it's an awesome little hardcore punk number. It's like a minute and 45 seconds.
It's not that long. No.
I mean, a lot of hardcore songs, honestly. So, but like you blink and it's over. But yeah, I mean, I've seen them like Sasaki come out, and they've had to loop the song before. Like, I think that happened at the Peter Pan show I went to. It just was taking too long, and you know, it's a long ramp at Sumo Hall, so it just took. They had to loop the song over again. But yeah.
Yeah, it's not long, but it leaves a lasting impression. You know, it's just a cacophony of unpleasant noises.
I love it.
From beginning to end. And, you know, this type of music is not my cup of tea.
I'm very shocked, Andrew.
I know, shocker, I know. But I will acknowledge that it is a distinctive sound. You know, I think one of the key features of a wrestling theme should be that it's recognizable. From the first few notes, you should hear a song hit and immediately know what song it is and which wrestler it belongs to. Because there have just been a ton of generic wrestling themes over the years.
Dude, that whole period in like WWE, ECW, like that they like the biggest culprits for that, where it seemed like everyone had the exact same like generic rock song. It was like. Like, how do you tell apart?
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, you have to scratch your head a few times to figure it out. Yeah. Helvetti, I hear that first note, the first opening riffs. I know exactly who's coming out. It is unmistakable. So even though I won't be listening to this song on its own probably ever again, I can acknowledge that it suits Daisuke Sasaki very well. And it is a distinctive song.
Yeah, I love this song, and it is a little more up my alley than it's up your alley. I'm really more post-hardcore than hardcore, but it's a really cool little number, and I think it like fits. I can't imagine Sasaki coming out to anything else. It's just perfect for him.
Right.
You need to have that angry guitar, the screaming vocals, and he just looks like he couldn't give less of shit about anything. It's just perfect. This is exactly what like in 1990, I don't know, like 1998, this is what that teenager's listening to probably, so it's perfect.
Speaking of distinctive, actually, and I noticed this the first DDT show I ever watched when I heard this song. Have you ever noticed that the opening guitar riff that comes in after the screeching note sounds a lot like the theme from Spider-Man? Da-da-da, 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 Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. They're very similar melodies, and I couldn't help but think that when I first heard it on a DDT show. And honestly, I still think it, you know, every time that Sasaki comes out for a match. So
see, I never noticed that, but yeah, that's awesome. I never noticed that.
Up next, theme number 3, and you know, John, I think it's time we inject a little electronic energy into the proceedings with some trance music. And when I think of wrestlers with trance entrance music, the first person that comes to mind is Toru Owashi, because his entrance music is quite possibly the most notorious trance song ever. It's Darude with Sandstorm. I know that this song has become, over the years, somewhat of a gag on the internet, something of a meme that the kids are doing these days, but I'll be damned if this song still isn't a ton of fun to listen to.
No, it fucking slaps. In fact,
I defy anybody out there to listen to this song and not get pumped up for it. I bet that the people who are listening to this episode right now just got pumped up listening to the minute or so that I played before I had to fade it down, because it's undeniable. You know, this song is just built to get your blood pumping and your adrenaline racing and have you jumping up and down at the sock hop or wherever kids go to dance these days. Because, you know, John, this song, it's just designed to make you shake a leg.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, this is... Okay, so I'm going to tell a little bit of a story here with Sandstorm. Do you know how far back this song and Owashi go?
I know he was a Toriumon guy. Was it that
far
back?
Yeah, so he has used this song. As far as I know, this is the only theme song he's ever used. Like, he used this song in the very first time I ever saw him wrestle in 2002 in the Toriumon 2000 project. At the time, it was such a weird fit because, like... He was like the big monster heel of the T2P roster, and he would come out to this very pleasant song, and it's like okay, well, here comes the nice little pulsating electronic beat is here to tell us that it's like Braun Strowman coming out to this, you know, like I can't really picture it in my head, but that's what it was like, and he would just kill everybody, but yeah, that's what he always came out to. And nowadays, I cannot imagine him coming out to anything else. It's just been so long, and you know, he became a very wacky figure in DDT. Like, he's very much a comedy person, but you know, back in the day, it was very weird that he was coming out to Sandstorm. But yeah, he came out to this back when the song was, you know, still kind of newish. Like, it was only a couple years old at that point. But yeah,
right.
I mean, I loved this song as a kid. I'm not gonna lie. Like, this is a teenage anthem for me. I'm a big fan of the Sandstorm. I was like a big DDR player, and there were some really cool, like, step notes of it, so I definitely heard this song a lot as a teenager. But yeah, Owashi, it was a weird fit for him at the time, but again, nowadays, like, this is his song. That he's had it for so long, it's the only song I can ever picture him coming out to.
To me, what makes this song work is the simplicity of it all. It's the simplicity of the build-up, where you start low with that initial high-pitched synth line, that... And then that second synth beat fades in, that... And then the third part comes in, which it's more staccato, it's, you know... And it gets faster and faster, and the tension is rising and rising, and it just builds and builds, and there's this huge, and then, you know, the chorus, it just it overflows, and they go, and then after a while, it starts all over again, and it repeats, and it builds back up. So it's such a simple and effective way of not only constructing a song, but also a wrestling theme as well, because you can milk this. You can milk the build-up during the intro, and then when the shit pops off, you can come out and make your entrance and have the people go nuts. So it works well as an entrance theme to help, you know, build up the hype.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just very... It's right up... It's not the most iconic DDT song, which is not even a song we're going to cover today, honestly, but, yeah, it's up there as far as, like, as far as Awashi and being a very iconic song.
You know, we talked about how Sumato fits Hiroshima and how Helvetti fits Sasaki, and you touched upon this. There's a good amount of humor in the fact that of all the guys who could use Sandstorm as a theme, it's Toru Awashi. Not just because of the whole Toriumon days where he was a big heel, but just the way he looks. You know,
he's a big chubby dude.
Yeah, he's got the slicked back mullet, the dad bod, the tan. He doesn't look like the type of guy who would enjoy Sandstorm, let alone use it as a theme song. But he does, and that's what makes it funny to me, you know?
I hope the reason why he used this song is because he personally liked it. Like, I really have no fucking idea why they gave him this as a theme in Toriumon. So I hope it's just they were like, hey, buddy, what do you want to come out to? He's like, Sandstorm! Like, I hope that's the reason, but I don't know.
Very enthusiastic.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's one of my favorite, it was one of my favorite songs back then. It was probably second only to, like, Milano Fever, as far as, like, a really great song from the Toriumon T2P.
And also, yeah. I just realized this as well. You can also further connect it to Toriumon / Dragon Gate because Awashi is a regular partner with Kazuki Harada,
yeah,
who uses Tokyo Go as his entrance theme, which we talked about on the Dragon Gate episode last year. So yeah. Another nice little connection there, I'd say.
Yeah, and they partner up together a lot with, you know, it's T2 Hide, the two of them, and the big boss in Chicago.
Yeah.
That was the one I was talking about. That I think is probably the most iconic. DDT
Fire. Song. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great song to karaoke too.
There's always Volume 2. You know, somewhere down the road. Now, speaking of hit songs, our next wrestler, much like Toru Awashi, uses a rather popular song as his entrance theme by a rather popular band. The wrestler is Ken Oka, and the band is Bizu, B'Z. And boy, oh boy, are they popular, because they're actually the best-selling artist in Japan ever, and also one of the biggest-selling artists in the world ever. They've claimed to have sold 100 million records. So this is off of their compilation album, Bizu the Best, Ultra Pleasure. It's a re-recording of their first big hit, and it's called Bad Communication, Ultra Pleasure Style.
Well, I really don't know how to say it, but I guess I love you.
We'll be right back.
Sean, I really don't know how to say it, but I guess I love you. Boom, bada boom, bada boom, bada boom,
bada boom, bada boom. It's the greatest, one of my favorite openings to a song ever. It's so awesome.
Let me tell you, this song does not kick Lieutenant ass. It does not kick Captain ass. This song kicks Major ass. Alright, I love this fucking song so much. I mentioned, you know, Helvetti not being in my wheelhouse. This song is 100% in my wheelhouse.
Oh, I believe that.
It's my kind of music, man. It's hard rock infused with some melodramatic pop vocals, some funky bass, a little bit of horns in there, some kick-ass guitars, some sing-along bits. Mwah! Molto bene. I mean, if this thing had a choir, I'd be doing backflips right now. So good. It's so good. Definitely my favorite song on the list here, for sure.
It's a wonderful song, and it's okay. So I go to karaoke pretty often. Like, you know, I'd say like 6 times a year. Strictly like little room karaoke, you know, like the Japanese style box karaoke. You're just in a room with your friends, so you're only embarrassing yourself in front of them. And, you know, I pick a lot of Japanese songs, which probably doesn't surprise people who know me. And this is one of the few Japanese songs that does not annoy the non-weeb populace in the room, because there's like some really cool parts where you can just easily sing along in English. You know, it's pretty easy to say whoa, 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 whoa. So everybody gets into that, and everybody gets into like, hey, hey, give me your body. We need. I'm not gonna sing now. I promise.
It's alright.
It's an awesome karaoke song, and it's one of the few Japanese songs I pick every time that doesn't piss everybody else in the room off.
Yeah, this song is perfect for the wrestling environment. It's got a lot of energy to it, a lot of movement, and there's also plenty of opportunities for crowd participation as well.
Yeah.
Because of these sing-along parts. All the hey, hey, ba-da-ba-da, and the whoa, 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 whoa.
Which he does like a stomp to, and he like...
Yeah, that's what he does. That's what Kenoka does. When he makes his entrance, he gets in the ring, and when it reaches the whoa, whoa, whoa part, he stomps the ground with one foot and does like a fist pump to each whoa while the crowd sings along. And that can get the crowd pumped up for the show, pumped up for the match, pumped up for Kenoka. So this is a great song to use as a theme.
I mean, when you're in the crowd for him coming out to this, it's just like, the crowd is just so happy. Like, they are just like so excited to sing this fucking song. And, you know, like, this song was the original version, came out in 1989, so, like, most of the people in the audience, like, probably grew up with it, you know, or at least heard it at some point. It's such a popular song in Japan. And the Ultra Pleasure Style is, like, a minute shorter than the original, which is, like, it's actually similar to how they performed it at live shows over the years anyway. But, yeah, it's a very popular song. You had a great comparison when we talked about this in Slack.
Yeah, so, yeah, we were trying to come up with like an equivalent of it in the West, like Western wrestling, US, UK, like which popular song would be a good comparison to this song. And I came up with Grado using Like a Prayer by Madonna.
Yes, which the crowd goes insane for too, and they sing along with it.
I mean, you know, that communication was Bizu's breakout hit, and while Like a Prayer wasn't that for Madonna, she had prior hits, of course, still, in terms of a song that is just massively popular and is still performed live to this day, and everybody knows it and can sing along to it, I think it works as a comparison to this song.
Yeah, I mean, and now, like a lot of people like to try to dismiss, I mean, the comparison with, is it Grado or Grado? I don't even know.
Grado.
Like, the comparison with Grado and Oka, like, you know, they're both very wacky dudes. They both, you know, do a lot of wacky stuff in their matches, and they both come out and like have a whole elaborate dance routine for their entrance scenes when the crowd sings along. So there's a lot of comparisons there. And like Grado, I've definitely seen people try to dismiss Oka as like, oh, you know, he's just a theme song. He just has this theme song that's really popular, so, you know, of course the crowd's gonna like him. I mean, Oka is a very charismatic person, and I think if he came out to any theme song, he'd probably still have his connection with the crowd, but I'm sure it helps that he's using one of the most popular songs in Japanese history, and that's the power that theme music can have, which is why we're all here doing this podcast. So You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with the fact, like, I hear people talk about Oka sometimes like he's cheating, and it's like, well, first of all, you have to have a persona that's wacky enough to use a 1989 pop hit. Like Daisuke Sasaki can't come out to this and start, you know, doing the fist bumps. It's just, you have to, that has to fit your persona. But I think it fits Ken Oka's persona so well, and he just, you know, he just gives these quotes sometimes where he's just like, I just love this song. That's it. I want to share my love of this song with the world. But yeah,
And you know, it's funny because looking at Ken Oka, like, aesthetically, he doesn't look like the kind of guy who would enjoy this song. Like, he's got the wife beater and the jeans, got kind of a working class blue collar vibe about him. So
that's because he's cosplaying Oneida.
Well, there you go. You solved it for me, John. You solved the mystery for me. So thank you very much.
him and Kai had that team together, it's because they were both Oneida cosplayers at the time. But yeah. But I mean, he does have like a kind of working class. I think he's more like working class wacky than right. anything. Like, he has his whole. So to give a little Oka backstory, like, he has his own promotion. He's not really on the DDT roster these days. He has Gambare Pro Wrestling, which basically means like try your best in Japanese, basically. So it's like try your best pro wrestling, and that's basically Ken Oka in a nutshell. Like, he's this guy that he tries his best, but his best isn't always good enough, you know. But he's been DDT KOD champion for like 10 minutes. He's that kind of guy. He's kind of like the Tommy. In a lot of ways, he's kind of like the Tommy Dreamer of DDT, you know. So, so nowadays when he shows up, it's kind of like a special occasion, but, you know, it's like a bigger shows on DDT proper. But yeah, he's Gambare's founder, owner, and, you know, sole proprietor, I guess. And his probably his best moment of the last 2 years was during the, have you ever seen the Minoru Suzuki and, you know, the empty Tokyo Dome match with
Takagi. Oh, yeah, I've seen clips of that, yeah.
So
yeah.
Oka is, like begging the Tokyo Dome to let him book a Gambare Pro Wrestling show, and he's offering, like, the equivalent of $1,000 to book. He's trying to book the Tokyo Dome for, like, $1,000.
Well, he's trying his best, John. He's trying his best.
He's trying his best, yes. It's just such a great visual of him, like, on his knees, like, offering this $1,000 in yen and just trying his hardest. But,
you know, if Ken Oka ever became a vegetable farmer, he could change his name to Ken Okra.
Okay.
Anyway, gang.
Oh, God, Andrew.
Look, I enjoyed it when I wrote it, all right?
So. you got me to laugh.
All right. I'm just saying to the people who are out there who are listening and groaning, all right, I'm trying my best, okay?
Gambare. Come on, give me a Gambare.
Gambare. All right. There we go. All right, we'll move on to our next wrestler here, a man who goes by the name of Kudo. Again, all capital letters, very important. Or Kudo, as some people might think it's pronounced.
I've heard people do that. Like, at Ring of Honor once, like, there was a guy who, like, when Kenta first showed up, who would always say, like, Kenta! Like, he would scream it. I'm like, no, that's not why.
Anyway, his entrance theme is called Noble Yellow Dragon. I like to refer to this one as DDT's version of the Hirooki Goto theme, because it's essentially the same song. I mean, not melodically, of course, but tonally, stylistically, It's the epic samurai warrior music.
Yeah.
And like Goto's theme, I think this song rules. You know, it's that traditional East Asian instrumentation with the flutes and the strings and the gongs and so forth. It has such, like, a strength behind it, such a nobility, so heroic. Like, you could defeat an entire army with this music. It's awesome, I think.
Yeah, and it fits Kudo because that's his whole thing. You know, he's a very proud Japanese man. He has he's the leader of Shuten Doji, which is like the very proud Japanese stable or unit. But I mean, like, it's a very like the Goto comparison's a great one. It's a theme that like really feels like it would be out of place in like a samurai movie, on like some kind of montage of, you know, the guy training for his next battle. So that's always the vibe I got with Kudo and Shuten Doji. Mm-hmm. It's like, they're just going to try their hardest. They're going to give the noble Japanese samurai spirit, and, you know, they lose, but they're going to go down fighting. It's Kudo in a nutshell. Its whole style is, you know, throwing kicks and hoping for the best. So,
and in terms of comparing it to Goto's theme, I think there's another similarity there when it comes to how the song is composed, because Goto's theme doesn't just start with the kick-ass samurai music. It has the intro with, that builds up the anticipation.
Oh, they never use it anymore.
Well, it does at times. It does at times. On the CD, at least.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know. I wish they would. I mean,
Same. Yeah. But that does create this calm before the storm atmosphere. Same here with Kudo's theme. Kudo's theme begins with this long percussion intro, and then you hear the strings start to creep in, and then it builds and builds. It sounds like Kudo is preparing to do battle.
Yeah.
Like he's backstage, he's hyping himself up, maybe swinging the nunchucks a few times around, and then when the melody kicks in, it's like Kudo is stepping out from behind the curtain and onto the field of battle, ready to kick some ass and take some names. So, kind of like Sandstorm, it's a cool way to build up the hype for the entrance.
Do you know whose theme song, the first time I heard it, I was like, wow, this is very similar to Kudo's theme, was the WWE Nakamura song. Not the heel one now, but like
I can see it. One. I can see it,
like,
yeah.
I heard a lot of similarities there, but like the very like Japanese-style string and like the long intro into, you know, a more bombastic song. I don't know, the two songs sound very similar to me. But Kudo is always like, it feels like he's, you know, like you're saying, like getting ready to go into battle, and you know, he's like on a battlefield, and they have like these dudes with like those giant drums.
Yes.
Like, you know, like hitting them to get ready. It's probably more of a Chinese thing actually, but you know, it's a very cool song, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it a lot. I think it's, again, pretty much like every song on this list, I think it really matches him really well. So
yeah,
there's really nobody on this list that's mismatched except maybe Toru Owashi, but he's had it for so long. That,
yeah, and it's funny too, so it has some value to it, of course. Yeah, our next theme on the list, and folks, for those of you who have been clamoring for some Japanese rap rock, well, you're in luck.
That's me.
You're in luck, John. This is the theme for Akito, and it's by a band called Nobody Knows, and it's called Heroes Come Back. At as soon as those opening drum beats hit, they set the tone for what the rest of the theme will be, which is a take charge, go-getter, rah-rah, babyface theme.
Yeah.
And the rap rock genre is great for that, because it has this, you know, energetic, spunky, in-your-face nature to it. And it's all over the lyrics as well. I found this English translation of the song, and the song is all about, you know, heroes standing up and together and fighting and being strong and courageous. One of the verses is, "The rising tide of cheers will give you courage. You'll suffer now as you stand back up, but I know you'll end up smiling. Push it all away and feel the thrill of victory." Akito is supposed to be a babyface, and that is Babyface Riding 101 right there. So,
So you're burying the lead here, though.
What's the... Oh,
this song
the Naruto thing, right? Yeah, it's
one
Naruto.
One of the most popular
anime
of all time.
I was saving it for later, but fine.
So the first opening to Naruto Shippuden. Now, would I blow your mind, Andrew, if I told you that I actually am not a big Naruto fan?
You know, really. It wouldn't.
Because you're probably like, that John is such a contrarian. Of course, even in anime, they can't like the popular thing. Which, fair enough, although I do love me some My Hero Academia, which is a popular thing right now. But I was not a big Naruto person. It just, I don't know, the show never clicked with me. But that doesn't mean I didn't hear this song. Like if you spent any amount of time in weeb circles in like the mid-aughts, like you heard this song, you know, all the time. Like you heard this at anime cons and karaoke rooms. You heard this from friends' cars. You just heard this song all over the place. So it's like the first time I started watching DET and saw Akito come out to it, you know, it'd be kind of like for you if, like, I don't know, what was like a really popular American television show in the mid-2000s? Shows how much I watch American television.
Let me think.
Like if someone came out to Sopranos theme or something.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. It's in my iTunes, that song, actually. So that's a good pick. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so like if someone came out to Sopranos theme, you'd probably be like, what the fuck? But yeah, I mean, that was basically the reaction I had. It was very funny. But the first time I heard him come out to this. But yeah, now it's much more like in my head is that Akito scene, but when he first came out, it was very much like, what the fuck, the Naruto song? But I always liked this song, even though I'm not a big fan of the show. And so I enjoy Japanese rap a lot, and, you know, it can be very goofy, because I think probably because they don't have, there's no real reason for Japanese people to rap, you know? Like, they don't have a long history with you know, the culture, in other words. And it's just something they're doing, you know, a lot of times it feels like there's something they're doing, like, as a laugh. And it's very, Japanese rap, it tends to be very wacky, very upbeat, a lot of the time. And it's a very, very cool little thing. If people haven't checked out a lot of Japanese rap music, they should go do that. But yeah, I enjoy this song. I think it works for Akito, too, because he's a very, you know, this kind of, he's another guy, he was in Shuten Doji. And now he's in All Out. Mm-hmm. He's a very big baby face and very much like, you know, fighting through Otter and all that kind of stuff. So it works really well for him.
Yeah, and the chorus reflects this heroic babyface spirit as well. And it also, like Kanoka's theme, helps build a rapport and community with the crowd. You know, it makes them feel involved because of how catchy it is and the key use of the word everybody. Come on, everybody, stand up. Stand up, today's your best shot. No one can catch you, speed hunter. Everyone, come back now. Yeah, come on, everybody, hands up. It's tomorrow is our hero's comeback.
It's so funny when you read those English lyrics because
some
of those lyrics are in the actual song.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, and like it's just funny to me. Like I'm hearing like, oh, yeah, that's the song. Oh, that's not the song. It's really when you start reading the stuff that's like translated.
Raise up your hands and count down. Let's go. 3, 2, 1. Make some noise, 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 noise.
I just say the English in this song is better than a lot of the English in a
lot of
the song. Like it actually sounds like sentences an English speaker would say, which is not always the case.
But people hear that and they want to stand up and put their hands up and make some noise and go crazy. So it's a good way to get people pumped up, for sure.
It's a cool theme song. I like it a lot, and I think it works for him. And once you get past the initial comedy of someone using the Naruto song, it's a cool song.
You know, my favorite for some reason, my favorite singer or rapper in the group is the one with the raspy voice. So what you gonna do? What you gonna do? I don't know why, but I just like that guy the most. He makes me smile. So
there's a lot of Japanese rap groups have like that one guy who sounds like he just chain smokes like 100 cigarettes. So
yeah, like it's, you know, Tom Waits or Genichiro Tenryu or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
They love their cigarettes in Japan.
Yes, they do. Yeah, yeah.
Andrew, like he's been there.
I've read stories, okay? Listen to me, man. I am not the ugly American that you pin me out to be, all right?
I just thought it was so funny the way you were agreeing with me. It sounded like we both were old drinking buddies in Sapporo or something.
I've read tweets, all right? Like, get off my tweets, back here. Come on. The second to last wrestler on our list is Speedball Mike Bailey. Now, in other parts of the world, Mike Bailey's entrance theme is actually Brass Monkey by the Beastie Boys.
Is it really?
Yeah. Wow. But in DDT nowadays, his music is decidedly different than that. It's not available on an album or an EP or iTunes or wherever. It's available as part of YouTube's audio library. This is Vibe Tracks with Overtime. This one is just totally chill. Really one of the most chill wrestling themes I think I've ever heard. Certainly a far cry from the insanity of Helvetti, or the energy of Heroes Come Back, or the bombast of Bad Communication, or whatever. It's just a nice, relaxing melody that repeats over and over and over again. Now granted, it's not the kind of song that would get you pumped up at a wrestling show. But with Mike Bailey, it works totally, because he comes out for his entrance and he's wearing the gi. He's got the kick pads with no shoes, got a big smile on his face. He
puts a fucking smile.
Big smile on his face. Yeah, yeah. He puts a fist to his open palm and bows. He looks like a new age karate kid, you know? Yeah. And you can just picture him in his dojo, centering himself, or centering his chi, or whatever the fuck, where the song's playing.
I don't think he's... So, it's Taekwondo, it's Korean, but...
Listen, John. I've read tweets, goddamn.
I've read tweets! They have chi!
I don't know, but anyway, you can see him in his dojo listening to this song, for sure. So it works for him.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of like the... In a lot of ways, he's like the RVD of DDT, and like, he just, nothing bothers him ever, so like, this song works because just, you pick this guy coming up to and just like, I'm chill, why can't you be chill? And I mean, DDT, like, with his character, they went like really far in the, they went even farther than WWE ever did with RVD. RVD was just like, well, he's a calm and cool dude that's basically, you know, even he made fun of it at one point when he's like, on that ECW show, he's like, remember when I used to be able to say things other than cool or whatever? But no, with Speedball, he took it in this direction of like, I'm so calm and cool and nothing bothers me to the point that it's actually kind of annoying. And that was basically the gimmick. Like, he was feuding with Takeshita, kind of, and, like, they built up to a title match. And he had this gimmick where he's just, like, going to kill you with kindness. He was, like, just so nice to everybody to the point where it just got so annoying. So, like, he's obnoxiously nice. It was, like, it was a very weird thing. But yeah, I mean, it's a very cool little song that I think matches his whole vibe and his whole energy really well. And nowadays he's best known as, like, Mao's BFF / they keep teasing us with maybe they're more than friends.
Ooh.
But, I mean, this is the company that gave us the Golden Lovers originally. So.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You did note that the theme represents his chill energy, his chill vibe. And I agree for sure. But in the ring, you know, he can turn it up for sure. He can get really nasty with those kicks and go nuts with some of those dives, like doing a shooting star knee drop or whatever the fuck he does. So the song does represent him, but it also it kind of masks him in a way, which I think is pretty cool.
Which I always thought was his persona was supposed to mask, you know, how vicious he can be sometimes. But, like, can I mention, too, how cool... I didn't know until, you know, until I saw these notes that it was, like, part of the YouTube audio library. So that's cool, because he did the... He has the YouTube audio library for his theme song, and then one time he used, you know, YouTube's owned by Google, and he used Google Translate at a press conference. One of the all-time best segments.
One of my favorite things ever. Oh, I love it so much.
Where, like, he's sitting there with the biggest, like, shit-eating grin on his face while this fucking Google Translate robot is reading off, like, this terrible translation.
If I can beat one member of Damnation, I can beat them all. And then it translates, Google translates it as, if I can beat one of those criminals. And then the announcer for DDT, it's like, criminals? He looks at Endo like, you know, is Damnation criminals? And Endo is corpsing like a motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, Endo could not keep it together.
He cannot hold it together. He's laughing so hard. He has to look away from the camera. He cannot keep a straight face.
I mean, that's Endo in a nutshell, basically. But yeah, he could not like keep a straight face on for that segment. It was... So an all-time great. If you've never seen it before, definitely seek it out.
So funny. Very funny. And yeah, this song is royalty-free. So you can play it at any show, big or small. And you don't have to worry about it because it's not going to get dubbed over. So just, you know, let it play.
Just play it out.
All right. The time has come for the final theme of the episode. And you know, John, you can talk about your Kinosuke Takeshita. You can talk about your Kota Ibushi. You can talk about your Hiroshima, but everybody knows that the ultimate ace of DDT wrestling is a sex doll.
Yeah.
That's right, folks. Our last wrestler is Yoshihiko, and his theme is Lady Gaga's number one hit tune, Poker Face. Of all the wrestlers in the world to have this song, Yoshihiko might be the perfect choice because he's got the ultimate poker face. You know, nobody knows what he's thinking, what he's planning, what he's feeling. Is it because of his unbreakable fortitude? Is it because he's so cool, calm, and collected? No, it's because he's a fucking blow-up sex doll. Of course he has the ultimate poker face. His face literally can't fucking move. So it's kind of a one-note joke, certainly. And actually, you told me this earlier, John. Yoshihiko doesn't actually use this song anymore. No. I didn't realize this until today. So my bad on this one. But really, I think there's no better way to end this episode than to at least acknowledge Yoshihiko in some form, because if there's anybody or anything that represents the sheer lunacy of DDT, it's Yoshihiko.
I mean, this is a way more fun song to talk about anyway than Yoshihiko's current theme, which is just the Ministry Undertaker theme. So I support this decision to talk about Poker Face. But let's talk about Poker Face. I have some stories about Poker Face. If you want to know how much being a weeaboo can break your brain, Poker Face is a great cautionary tale. So there was this series called Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged in the early to mid aughts. There's basically this online YouTube web series that was taking the very popular children's animated program Yu-Gi-Oh! And like basically overdubbing it and getting it very comedic lines and stuff. And they did a cover of Poker Face based on one of the characters who like inexplicably had like a Brooklyn accent in the English dub.
Oh, Joey. Show. Yeah.
Yeah, Joey.
Joey Wheeler.
You watched some Yu-Gi-Oh!
Of course I did. Of course I did.
That's awesome.
I love that show. Of
Brooklyn
course.
Brooklyn Rage was the name of the cover songs. Instead of You Can't Read My Poker Face, it was You Can't Beat My, I Can't Beat My Brooklyn Rage. And I've heard the Brooklyn Rage version so many times that if this song comes on, I will confuse the lyrics with the Poker Face lyrics. And it's hard for me to remember which one is which, because I know the Brooklyn Rage lyrics by heart. So, like, I probably know the lyrics to this stupid web joke song that's a parody of an anime series about a children's card game better than I know the actual Poker Face lyrics. So, being a weeaboo can break your brain. That's my word of warning. The other thing about Poker Face is, believe it or not, when this song came out, the girl I was dating at the time, her sister knew Lady Gaga. Like, she went to Rutgers with her. Which is, I never, like, found any, like, salacious details other than the fact that I think I heard that she was bisexual before this became common knowledge. But yeah, she went to college with her. She was a crazy party girl, which is, I guess, what you would expect for Lady Gaga in college. So
You know, with Yoshihiko and Lady Gaga, little connection there. Lady Gaga likes to dress up in these weird elaborate outfits, like the meat dress or the bubble dress, and Yoshihiko has dressed up as well. We've seen Great Muta Yoshihiko, Undertaker Yoshihiko, Hulk Hogan Yoshihiko. So the two share a love of exotic fashion, you might say. So
yeah, it's something. But it's Lady Gaga and
listen, Yoshihiko. It's a one-note joke. All right, it is what it is.
I love,
okay,
I love
that's
Yoshihiko.
All I got.
I'm not.
Yeah,
I ain't out here to say anything bad about Yoshihiko. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a. I mean, this was Lady Gaga's first big hit, right? I think
it was, yeah.
Yeah, Poker Face. Then we got like, she went through all the run of big hits after this, like Love Game,
Just Dance, Paparazzi, Bad Romance, whole bunch of them.
Which also has a Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge cover called Leather Pants.
Of course it does. Of course it does.
And then Telephone has Pharaoh's Throne, which, yeah. But yeah, Lady Gaga. I always enjoyed her. I have no issue with Lady Gaga. I don't know about you, Andrew. But
yeah, I'm not a huge fan of hers, but I enjoy some hits.
After like once we get to like Born This Way, that's kind of when I found my off ramp from the Lady Gaga. But the early stuff was fun.
Now, do you remember the first time you ever saw Yoshihiko, and like what were your thoughts about it?
It was probably Ibushi giving Yoshihiko the fucking Street Fighter power drivers, and what I thought was what the fuck is this? I mean, like, what are you supposed to think when you see a wrestler giving a blow-up doll, like, a spinning, jumping, rotating pile driver? I mean, like, I think, what the fuck am I watching? Yeah, but Yoshihiko's pretty amazing. And the best part is when, like, the Yoshihiko, like, you know, puppet dance, the puppet doll or, you know, the puppet handler gets in the ring and, like, he's wearing, like, the traditional, like, all black, like,
yes.
The kabuki puppeteers wear. And, like, it's just fucking hilarious. And, like, this man, like, just getting in the ring. I think it used to be Michael Nakazawa. I think he used to do this, but I could be wrong. Somebody who watched ET longer than me would probably be able to tell you better, but I think Nakazawa used to do this. But yeah, it's just the puppeteers are really funny. And then I think Yoshiko has, like, an all-time great appearance in the, I think it's Peter Pan 2016, Iron Man Heavy Metal Weight Battle Royal, because, like, Yoshihiko, you know, makes the surprise appearance, the lights go out, and I'm already using the Undertaker Ministry theme by this point, so, like, the Undertaker, like, theme hits. Everybody knows exactly what it is, of course. Like, no one's like, oh, the Undertaker's about to come out. It's like, oh, here comes Yoshihiko. And, you know, Yoshihiko just, like, appears on Kazuki Hirata's, like, neck. But, like, his legs are on his neck and starts doing, like, a crazy hurricanrana. And, like, the body of this blow-up doll is taking out everybody. And then, it, like, Kenzo Suzuki, of all people, who have been on the floor at this point, gets back in the ring, gets hit by this blow-up doll, like, spinning around, and does the single funniest battle royal elimination of all time, where he basically takes this very, very gentle shot from this blow-up doll and just throws himself, like, leaps over the top rope. I watched this elimination, Yoshihiko Kenzo Suzuki, probably, like, 150 straight times. Like, I just could not stop rewinding it and watching it, like, just crying with laughter. So that's the kind of entertainment DDT can bring you, everybody.
Yeah, I mentioned on the Golden Lovers episode that I did with Sarah Flannery that the first time I ever saw Kota Ibushi was the clip of him quote-unquote taking the Infinite Destroyer from Yoshihiko, which in reality it's just Ibushi giving himself like 40 Canadian Destroyers around the ring, you know. That was also the first time I ever saw Yoshihiko, and I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, I was captivated by how insane it was, you know? That was the first time I ever saw it.
I mean, so, Kenny Omega had a great match with Yoshihiko, too.
Yeah, yeah. My favorite Yoshihiko moment ever took place, it was during a tag match between Yoshihiko and Denshoku Dino versus Kenny and Kota. And Yoshihiko, he's not the most durable wrestler, shall we say. He's been injured a few times.
Killed three times.
Killed, yeah. Killed is probably a better word for it, yeah. The first time was when Antonio Honda did a knee drop on his head, and Yoshihiko's head literally burst open and deflated.
Murderer!
The second time was during this tag match, when Kenny does like a giant, like a massive giant swing and throws Yoshihiko out of the ring, and Yoshihiko, he splits open and his cotton stuffing falls out, and they take him to the back. Of course they take him to the back. Then later in the match, Ibushi has...
Can I just say too, they did not stop the match for a fatality.
Nope, they didn't. Well, they're
one
pros, so, you know,
head split open and they continued.
Listen, brother, they're pros, all right? You gotta... The paycheck's still waiting for them, all right? So, but anyway, Ibushi has Dino in an ankle lock, and it looks like Dino is going to tap out. Then the lights go out, and Undertaker's You're Gonna Pay theme hits. Boom, boom, dead man walking. You've done it now. You've gone and made a big mistake. And Yoshihiko comes back out, and he's dressed like big, evil, American badass Undertaker with the hair and the bandana and the goatee and the vest, and they even put the Sarah tattoo on his neck.
I know, that's
and
so great.
He is riding He's riding on a plastic tricycle, and he comes into the ring, and he hits Kenny and Kota with, like, the biggest double choke slam ever. And, of course, being a massive Undertaker fan, I am dying when I see this. It is so much fun to see. And the piece de resistance, of course, was the entrance video, because they made an entrance video for him, which had a text overlay pop up that said, "Max Bump is now," because the show was Max Bump 09, and the vocal is, "You've done it now." So it was Max Bump is now. I love it. So funny. And there's also a shot of him on the tricycle. And you know how Undertaker, he raises his arm up with the fist? Yoshihiko does it in the video, but you can clearly see that there is a stick attached to his arm, and somebody off screen he's lifting the stick up, so it raises the arm. Oh, it's so fucking funny, man. It's so fucking funny. And then that Yoshihiko was killed again by Honda, except this time...
Did he shoot him with a gun?
Honda shot him with a gun. Yes.
Oh, God.
That is DDT wrestling in a nutshell right there. So yeah, that's it.
I love DDT. We basically just summed it up. I don't know what else there's to say. Poker Face, good song. Brooklyn Rage, good song. And Yoshihiko, good wrestler.
All right, that was our look at just some of the themes that DDT wrestling has to offer. There's a wide range of sounds and styles and genres in that company. And of course, there are so many more to choose from. We'll get to them at some point in the future, I'm sure. And you know, if any of our discussion today has interested you in DDT wrestling, go ahead and watch it. You know, there's plenty to watch. And I believe, John, that those Kirk and Hall shows that DDT runs every month or so.
Yeah, once a month, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Those are free to watch streaming live on DDT Universe.
Anything that airs on Abema, that also airs on DDT Universe, always streams live on Universe for free. So it's
you have to pay for VOD, though. But
So it's the Corkins and the really big shows, too. Like the Judgment, Peter Pan, like the big, big Sumo Hall shows, those air for free live, too. So if you want to check out DDT, there ain't nothing stopping you. Just go to DDTUniverse.com, you know, tune in to, you know, again, the live show is like, Corrigan's like 11 p.m. on the East Coast, 8 p.m. on the Pacific Coast. So you Pacific Coast people can just sit at home on Saturday night and watch it at a decent time. But yeah, it's a very, very cool promotion that I highly recommend checking out. I mean, you jumped in, like, I think one of the most perfect times ever, because you jumped in right as the D.O.,
Grand the D-King, Prix, yeah.
Yeah, which is, well, that's what O means, but a D-King.
Oh, well,
okay. D-O Grand Prix, and yeah, it's the D-O Grand Prix, I thought that was amazing, so you must have had a good time.
Yeah, it was great, yeah, it was a great way to, you know, get to know the atmosphere of DDT, watch a bunch of matches, get to know the wrestlers and their music and their finishers, all that stuff, and it was great because, with the exception of, like, Joey Ryan, almost all the wrestlers in it were, you know, serious wrestlers, you might say. So it's a great way to immerse yourself into the non-comedy side of DDT wrestling. And yeah, it was my jumping in point. So like I said, I don't watch all the shows. I pretty much just watch like the big ones, like the Kirk and Hall or the Sumo Hall shows. And I do want to plug again here, dramaticddt.wordpress.com. That is the unofficial English language blog that follows DDT. And the guy who runs it, we mentioned him before, Jamie OD on Twitter, he does an amazing job running it and keeping it up to date with the rosters and the cards and the results, the translations, all that stuff. Great resource to have to get into DDT. So
I also want to plug the new English Twitter, the official English Twitter.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
At @DDTPro_ENG. So that's a good thing to follow if you want like real-time English translations, you know, tweets and promos as they're going on. It's a huge resource now. So definitely check that out. And I mean, the coolest thing too about DDT is if you sign up for DDT Universe, which is, you know, I think 999 yen, you get access to DDT. You also get DNA. You get Tokyo Joshi Pro. You see some Joshi. Tokyo Joshi Pro's had a great year so far. So definitely go check that out if you haven't been checking it out.
Basara, all the sub promotions.
Get Gambare.
Yeah.
Get
Gambare. Yeah, all the sub promotions are on there too. So yeah, and of course all the big names that people know, like Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, El Generico, they're all in there. So.
Yeah, if you want to see Omega versus Generico for the KOD title, yeah, that's on there, which is a very cool, very awesome match.
And of course, the wacky stuff is on there too. You know, like fighting in apartments and in offices and the outdoors and on a merry-go-round and all that fun stuff. Everything is pretty much on there. So, John, thank you for coming on. This was an absolute blast, to say the least. I know you said at the beginning this past week wasn't the best for you, and I do want to say again here how sorry I am for the loss of Sean Williams. I know you two were very close friends for many years. It really was just so tough to hear of his passing so suddenly and at such a young age. I never really interacted with him that much, maybe a few times on Twitter. But I heard him on Omakase a bunch of times, and I could tell he was just a really nice guy. So I just want to give my condolences to you and to Sean's fiance and his family, and to thank you again for coming on here and putting up with my awful jokes. And
yeah, I had a lot of fun, which I definitely needed.
Yeah, so. Well, I do appreciate it. So
yeah.
And I think wasn't Sean a fan of DDT as well?
He was more of a Tokyo Joshi Pro fan, but yeah.
He did
like DDT too. But yeah, I mean, I miss him every day, and I talked a lot about it on the new Omakase. I did like a little tribute, like a 5-minute tribute to him at the start of the episode. So, but yeah, I mean, it's been about, as a recording this, it's been about a week since I found out, and you know, it's been very tough. Mm.
Oh. A big rock and peace, I'd say, to Sean Williams. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, that does it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. John, this is the part of the show where we give our plugs out. So, please, go ahead, plug away.
Well, first of all, obviously, there is the Wrestling Omakase podcast, which is, you know, a good old time. We have a new co-host / guest, you know, every week, at least one, sometimes like three, like we're doing next week with our next part of the fantasy draft. So that's right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Our Twitter is at WrestleOmakase, not wrestling because it wouldn't fit. So you can always keep up with everything there if you want to ask questions, if you want to just know what the next episode is going to be. You know, definitely check out at WrestleOmakase. And then my Twitter is at Tushanshu in LA. I'm not going to tell you how to spell that. You can try to guess. My Twitter is pretty awful anyway. You really don't want to follow it. It's just like, it's either me like telling you how shitty WWE is, or me telling you about some weeaboo thing you don't care about. And, you know, I guess I tweet about Japanese wrestling sometimes.
Maybe just a little.
A little bit. But yeah, there you go. Definitely check that out. And mostly just listen to Wrestling Omakase. It's a good old time.
Definitely, definitely. And Music of the Mat is part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network, home to a variety of great wrestling podcasts like Wrestling Omakase. Almost did it again there, John. Almost did it again. I saved myself there. I saved myself. Wrestling Omakase is on there, but also the VOW flagship podcast, Shake Them Ropes, Sarah and Sarah, WrestleNomics, Brit Rez Roundtable, and the new New Japan podcast called the Super J-Cast. All those podcasts and more at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at MusicOfTheMat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. My Twitter is not garbage. It's delightful, so give me a follow there. check out the YouTube playlist for this episode and past episodes at the VOW forums at voicesofwrestling.com/forum. And of course, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, etc., etc. And, you know, in general, 3, 2, 1, make some noise about Music of the Mat.
Make some noise, yeah.
John, thank you again. I'm sure I'll have you back on the show at some point. Maybe more DDT, maybe a different topic, but it'll be fun regardless, I'm sure.
Yeah, can't wait to come back on.
All right, well, for John Carroll, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.